Back when I was studying to become a minister, I took part in something called clinical pastoral education, which is basically seminary jargon for chaplaincy boot camp. I'd finished all of my classes by this point and was ready to put the learning I'd done in the classroom to good use. And for the first few weeks serving as a student chaplain at a continuing care retirement community, things went great. And then I was assigned to visit with a resident who suffered with a condition that prevented them from being able to communicate. While this person could understand everything that I was saying, they couldn't respond back to me. And so I spent a lot of time trying to learn how to communicate with this person. We tried a notepad at first so this person could write letters or words on it for me to read, but that didn't work. We tried boards with letters, felt pads with felt letters, all sorts of different things, but that didn't work either. And eventually I came to dread visiting this resident because not knowing what this person was thinking was making me really uncomfortable. So I shared this with my supervisor, and he, of course, laughed and said, "Well, Kristen, it's not about you." Right. And then he told me to read the story of Job in the Hebrew Bible. Okay. So if you've read that story or if you've heard that story told, you may remember that in the beginning, Job loses everything that is important to him. He loses his family, he loses his home, everything that's dear to him. He's plagued with a terrible sickness. He's in an awful lot of pain. And upon hearing about all that has befallen him, Job's friends travel to be with him. And in the cultural style of their day, they threw ashes on their heads and they ripped their clothing and they sat on the ground with him for several days in complete silence. And the reason that they did this, the reason that the story gives us, is because his suffering was so great. Now, after reading that story, I realized that in my interactions with this resident, my focus had actually been on my own need to understand this person, on my need to have the right words to say, not on this resident's need for me to simply be present to their suffering. In a subtle but important way, I had placed my need rather than hers at the center of our time together. It was the first time I really understood what other clergy often say about the work of getting themselves out of the way so that they can minister to others. This new awareness helped me realize that what this resident likely needed to hear from me wasn't the perfect phrase or prayer, but simply that I couldn't imagine how frustrating it must be not to be able to participate in conversation, to never feel like they were being heard. And simply saying those words to this resident transformed my visits with them. And it shapes how I think about the ministry of being present today. Perhaps you too have felt uncomfortable when talking with someone in pain, in grief, in crisis. Often we feel the need to say the right words and wind up instead saying something that hurts the person in pain. If you've ever been open about losing a loved one or a friend, for instance, you've likely had people tell you some version of, "Well, everything happens for a reason," or, "At least they aren't suffering anymore." And while I imagine the people offering such phrases mean well, I've come to wonder if they are really saying these things to try to make themselves feel better after coming face to face with the intense grief of another person. To connect with anyone in pain is to risk feeling uncomfortable, either by the depth of their suffering or the realization that one day we too will experience whatever painful situation they are in. Being fully present to others in this way requires us to de-center ourselves and our own discomfort. It requires us to de-center our personal and internal stuff so that for a time we can place the other person at the center of our focus. The power of presence isn't about finding or hearing the right words of comfort. It's about giving and receiving the experience of feeling understood, an experience that empowers us to find the strength and courage to face the reality of our lives ourselves. The power of presence is about how this experience of being truly seen and heard can help us heal and grow and maybe even change our hearts. This ministry of presence is something Christian and I are called to do as part of our roles as your co-ministers. And as Barbara shared in her Beginning the Journey reflection, it's something our chaplains like Carolyn and Fran offer us every single Sunday after worship. It's something our pastoral associates offer people going through illness or grief or other life challenges, and something that you can learn how to offer others if you're interested in volunteering in that way. But even if that kind of pastoral volunteer work isn't quite for you, I think that the internal emotional skill of being able to be present to other people, being able to center the needs of other people who have very different needs than we do, is going to be important for us as individuals and as a community of faith as our country enters a very worrisome and very uncertain future. All over our country, clergy from many traditions are meeting together, in person and virtually, to talk about how our religious communities can begin to organize, to coordinate and plan our resistance to the fascism and hate and transphobia and xenophobia and rape culture that the presidential election only served to intensify. Now, I don't think of myself as an alarmist, but I'm coming to believe that the years ahead of us are going to require those of us who believe in freedom and justice and equality to work very hard in the service of preserving those foundational values. I'm coming to believe that in the years ahead, there may be the people in our wider communities who need things that we can provide, even if they aren't things that we know yet how to provide. I'm coming to believe that our impact as a congregation in the coming years could be very significant, that we could sow an awful lot of justice and goodness and mercy in our corner of the world. Thank you. But I'm coming to believe that it's going to take our willingness to de-center some of the things that we have always done and some of the things that we might want to do so that we can place the needs of very vulnerable people at the very center of our work as a community. Lots of folks have asked Christian and me what our vision is for this congregation in the next few years. We've been in conversation with the board about our ends, which basically are just short-term broad goals, and there's been talk among the whole community of strategic planning. And I have to confess feeling a little bit hesitant to commit to many details before I have a better understanding of how those who are most vulnerable in a Trump America will most need us to be present for them. Will they need us to become a sanctuary church, taking in people in immediate danger of being deported? Will they need us to help coordinate urgent health care for the elderly if Medicare is defunded? Now, some might question if this is the right time for us to be thinking about taking on such a large project since we've got financial challenges aplenty already. And yet almost all churches and nonprofit organizations and institutions I know who are working for justice are facing financial challenges right now. And now is exactly the time for us to take the risk of bringing love and justice and goodness to birth here in Kensington. I'm committed to working with our energized and energizing Social Justice Council to discern how the Unitarian Universalist Church of Berkeley will be called to be present to the vulnerable in our communities, and I hope that you are too. Because I believe that the years ahead may very well ask us to decenter some of what we might want to be as a church and to center what others need us to become. I hope and I pray that you will join me in a spirit of curiosity and openness about how we are being called to be present, how we are being called to be of service. And I hope and I pray that you will join in the ongoing conversation about how to support and nurture this community that strives to tend that flame in and with and among us that never dies away, even within each of our darkest nights. That's what it's all about. Amen.